What does it mean to be truly educated?
So to me, I think to be truly educated, it's more of a process or an approach than it is like an arriving somewhere at a threshold, I think. It has to do with being able to take ownership over your learning and knowing what you need and how to get it or who to get help from, and thinking sort of outside of the box and putting things together. And I think that all humans are really capable of being truly educated. And I think that that is an important component of the idea behind inclusion.
That's Kristen Ulias. Kristen is an inclusion specialist at Da Vinci Charter Academy and emeritus faculty with pblworks.org.
Kristen will share her experience with school-wide PBL that connects schools to the greater community by engaging learners of all abilities.
Kristen's vision of inclusion centers around engaging all learners in authentic activities that connect students to the greater world.
She challenges students and teachers in her school to build bridges between the classroom and the community through project-based learning.
Welcome to Season 3 of Beyond the Curriculum. I'm your host, Aaron Blackwelder, high school English teacher and co-founder of Teachers Going Gradeless.
And I'm Michelle Cottrell-Williams, 2018 Virginia State Teacher of the Year, former high school history teacher, and current instructional coach at the middle school level.
In this season, we are looking at inclusion and how creating more inclusive environments provides spaces where all learners can thrive.
We will be learning from teachers and advocates who will help us gain perspective on what inclusion means and how educators can be intentional as they create more inclusive environments.
Some ways inclusion is done well, and how general education teachers can partner with both special education teachers and community members to take learners beyond the curriculum. What is inclusion and why is it important for educators to intentionally build inclusive spaces?
So inclusion is a couple things. And I think at the most basic level, from a special education standpoint, inclusion is the practice of having students with disabilities, no matter what their disability label is or the extensiveness of their support needs, being educated alongside their typically developing peers in the general education classrooms, in their neighborhood or choice schools. And beyond that, I think it's really important to kind of recognize that inclusion exists because the practice of special education historically and currently, the norm has really been that students with disabilities are segregated and taught in special day classes, sometimes bused to different schools. And so inclusion is really a practice that has developed in response to that. And it's the idea that students with disabilities and the services that they need through special education can be implemented in their neighborhood schools, in general education classrooms. And there's some further definitions, I think, of inclusion. If you look at data, for instance, in the United States, there is some qualifiers of if students are educated for at least 80% of their day in general education, I think that's considered an inclusive environment. And that's really only about the time that they're spending in general education, which is really the first step. But beyond that, I think that inclusion really is about the intentional planning for success of all students to learn alongside each other in a way that is meaningful. So for something to be truly inclusive, it needs to be engaging for all students. All students need to be learning, not just sort of in the same room together. And this is important for a few reasons. And the first and foremost to me, and the reason I became such an advocate for inclusion, is because it's an equity issue. It's a moral and ethical issue for me. Mm-hmm. If we believe as a society that separate is not equal, then why do we put up with this norm of educating students with disabilities in separate mm-hmm. and unequal locations? And I got my start in special education actually in some of the most segregated places. So I just happened upon special education working in a residential non-public school in the dorms, and sort of went into a credential program to start to teach special day classes so I could kind of become a barrier to keep students in, at least in public schools, and not end up in non-public schools. And so I taught in special day classes, and I found that, for one, I really love the job, right? Because I love students with disabilities. I think they're really fun to work with. You get to treat them, you kind of get the time and space to treat them as the individuals that all students are, but you don't have 150 of them, you know, at once. And I found the better I did at my job, the more I was convincing people that special day classes were a great alternative for their students. So I really, a few years in, pushed myself to seek out an inclusive job, so that the better job I did, the more I was convincing people that inclusion was the right thing for students, because that's what I believed. And I think, you know, beyond that, beyond the idea of just it being a social justice issue and sort of the moral compass of it, there's overwhelming evidence that educating students with disabilities in education, or excuse me, in inclusive environments, leads to better outcomes for students with disabilities in addition to students without disabilities. And there's not even a lot of research that supports that special day classes in segregated environments lead to better outcomes. It really came out of just people feeling like it was the right thing to do because it was easier. And because, frankly, you know, if you look at the history of disability, special education, students with disabilities weren't even entitled to an education until 1975. They were allowed to be excluded from education altogether. So when they were allowed in the door, it was easier to sort of keep classrooms the same and teach them in this other place over here, right? And it just has been slow to develop. But if we're looking at the idea too of, you know, the world we live in is not segregated, and there's not jobs for students with disabilities that don't include working with people without disabilities. And the rest of us as well, you know, who maybe don't have disabilities, we have to learn how to work with all different kinds of people as well, right? So it also just doesn't really make sense, in my opinion, to sort of create these different places for people to learn. And classrooms themselves are already so heterogeneous. It's not like if you exclude students with disabilities, everybody learns the same, right? So I don't think it's that big of a stretch to widen that spectrum a little bit. It is at first, for sure, I think. And I can speak to teacher education programs and sort of maybe especially in the past, the lack of preparation they gave general ed teachers to actually know how to support students with disabilities in an inclusive environment. But that's changing. And that's one thing that I'll also say, that as a teacher, I think including students with disabilities in your classroom makes you a better teacher, hands down, no doubt about it. Once you really start to think about addressing the needs of learners who aren't getting the way you're doing it, and you learn how to adjust and adapt and kind of innovate, you really start to be able to support so many other students with those strategies, and you build your capacity as a teacher for sure. You know, one of the things I always joke with student teachers or general ed teachers who are new to inclusion is, I say, you're not always going to know what the right thing to do is, but you'll always know when you're doing the wrong thing, right? Students with disabilities, they will let you know. I mean, students in general will let you know. It's going to be obvious when it's not working, and then you figure out how to regroup. And that's, I think that's one of the more powerful things, as a teacher that I've seen, is just the way that it changes the way all students are taught, and the impact it has for students even without disabilities is pretty profound.
Yeah. You facilitate project-based learning with your students. So what does that look like for you? What does project-based learning look like for you and your students?
Well, I'll say first that I do a lot more of helping general ed teachers facilitate project-based learning with my students than mm-hmm. doing it myself.
Okay.
I do both, and I'll speak to both a little bit. But I work with general ed teachers to co-plan and design projects initially to be universally designed. And one of the things I did when I started working at a wall-to-wall PBL school as an inclusion specialist was I became one of the experts in project-based learning. So I had some access to expertise in the room, right? I was never going to mm-hmm. be able to be a content expert better than my content experts. So I sort of looked at it like I will become the process expert, and the process mm-hmm. was PBL. So that was really helpful because I also have become an instructional coach and worked with teachers from the get-go about how to design projects, which kind of gives me an in to help them to design them from the beginning to address, you know, multiple means of representation and multiple means of engagement, which PBL is really well suited for already. And then I support them once the project has been designed as well in looking at if there's certain students that still need further adaptations, accommodations, or modifications or support strategies, how are we going to implement those? But at our school, we really lean on two of the big organizations in the project-based learning world, the New Tech Network and then PBL Works, which is formerly the Buck Institute for Education, mm-hmm. and their models of project-based learning to guide our practice. So our projects typically start with an engaging entry event to launch inquiry around a driving question or a challenging problem that students are going to solve as a team or work towards a product as a team that has some public presentation or some public product that they're going to present at the end. And so what this does is it gives students an idea of what they might do and gives them an intriguing angle on the content or skills and gives them an actual reason to need to know the information, right? Beyond just, I'm going to have a test on this and I want to get an A. Mm-hmm. They're going to need to know that information in order to create this product or to present it to this community or to share it with students younger than them, whatever it is embedded in the project. And that really provides a sense of ownership over them wanting to be successful and wanting to learn the information well, and trying to help them figure out what is it that I do need to know in order to get to this point. So that's all part of the process of developing the inquiry within the project so that students are starting to ask really good questions. Mm-hmm. And this provides a nice way for teachers to kind of provide some direct instruction, which, you know, is often thought about as mutually exclusive with PBL. I think that's a myth about mm-hmm. PBL. And really, it's about balancing direct instruction and other instructional practices with helping students connect that to why they need that information and balancing it with other practices like student-led inquiry and working collaboratively. Mm-hmm. And then projects are designed around this central idea of students working in teams to solve problems or create products that will be shared publicly, as I mentioned, and hopefully authentically. The idea is that they will somehow go through either an authentic process or the product will be authentic. There will be some sort of authentic audience. So that it touches on them feeling like it's meaningful work to do. And sometimes it's really beneficial to get them involved in deciding what those products might be or what would be meaningful about that, what would be authentic as a product for this challenging problem, right?
Mm-hmm. And what are some projects that you have had your students do that have been successful?
Well, a couple that I've done that I'm pretty proud of, and mine have looked a little bit different because I only teach, I teach one elective period of a support class, right? So mm-hmm. I'm really using that period to support my students in their their other projects, but I also like to use project-based learning to help them kind of take over ownership over their education in general and learn more about themselves and advocate for themselves. So I've done two cool projects with students that I'm proud of recently. One is called a VIP video project, where students at the very beginning of the year looked at their IEP with me and helped me create a 1 to 2 page summary of their IEP and created a video to introduce themselves to their teachers and explain what they needed from their teachers in the classroom, what their accommodations were, how they work best, what their strengths are, what they want to be when they, you know, graduate from high school. And it was really powerful, especially because we were doing distance learning and teachers didn't really get a chance to get to know students in person right away. Another project that I do with students, that's another sort of individual project because of the nature of my class, is student-led IEPs. So that doesn't kind of get rolled out altogether, but I do task students with taking over their IEP meeting, facilitating it, demonstrating their progress on goals, inviting people, hosting it. And this allows them to really take ownership over their team in a way that they're going to need to do after high school. And I really wanted to do that because I just felt like the authentic audience is already really built in. We're already going to have this meeting and either I can talk about students or they can talk about themselves. And student-led IEPs isn't necessarily a PBL project, but I sort of utilized the process of PBL that my students were familiar with to implement it with them. And then my school does a lot of great projects that I've helped design or facilitate and implement. My school in general has English and history classes paired so that they can do projects that are interdisciplinary. So an example of a recent project we did in junior year was an America at War project, where students were reading a novel that related to a specific war in American history. And then they did an interview of a veteran for that war that got published with the Library of Congress. And
wow.
Presented that, and we've been doing this project in particular for the last few years. And what's nice is I've really gotten to know all these veterans in our community, and they all come out for the presentations of these America at War presentations of the veterans and of the veteran interviews and what students have learned about their specific war and war in general through this process. So that one's really powerful. Do you want me to share some more examples, or I'm not sure
if
I'm talking?
Yeah, please do.
Another one that's really cool, it's a little bit more simulated, that we do with our 10th graders. And I work in an interesting district where 10th graders are first year that we get our high school students. They sort of continue at the junior high in 9th grade, and then they come to us for the first time in 10th grade. Mm-hmm. So there's sort of, some of them have been in project-based learning. We have a junior high as well, but some of them are coming to us and have never done project-based learning before. And this is the big project of the junior year that they kind of work all year up to being able to take this level of risk. But they do a pop-up World War I museum night that is also our school's open house. So we have hundreds of people from the community that come to our school for this World War I pop-up museum night, and students work in teams to create booths. They're given at first, a sort of a mock letter from a museum asking them to enter a contest for a new World War I museum display. They go to the California Museum as a field trip to learn how to create museum displays, how to be a museum docent, from a presentation from the people that work at the museum, mm-hmm. really tailored to that. And then they read All Quiet on the Western Front in their English class and build sort of piece by piece throughout this six-week project their museum display, writing letters from home from a soldier as they're reading All Quiet on the Western Front. They pick a theme for their project or for their booth. So sometimes they'll pick a country that they have a connection to. Sometimes they'll pick a part of the war that they really find fascinating, like the Christmas truce. And they'll start at 6 o'clock in the morning building their museum displays. Mm-hmm. And at 6 o'clock at night, we start the open house, and they give presentations to the community and then their presentation to their panel. And then they tear it all down. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of neat because it's become a signature event at our school, and it's actually gotten a lot of students to come to our school. And so they kind of look forward to it. They know it's coming. They know what it's about. It's also one of the first times that they really make this big public display, and present to the community. And what I like about projects like this are that as teachers, you know, when you have this kind of public product, and you get to take a little bit of a different role with students, mm-hmm. where you're sort of coaching them and supporting them and helping them get to this finish line that we're all going to get to together, rather than telling them they need this information and trying to get them engaged in it. And it's really neat way to break down barriers, I think, and build closer relationships with students, but also to see them, you know, every year, even my students that struggle with so many of these skills and don't want to read the book, they blow me away when they're given these opportunities to be creative and to think deeply and you know, to do something different.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Do you want to skip down to number 5 and then come back to number 4?
Number 5, essentially. She just answered number 5. So I'm going to let you come back to number 4.
Okay. Awesome. Okay. What are some barriers that both special education teachers and general education teachers need to overcome to help build more inclusive environments? And how does PBL support this?
Well, I think one of the big barriers that general education and special education teachers are faced with that make it hard to build inclusive environments are just the idea that students are individuals and they have these individual goals in the classrooms, right? That they're working on their own work and they're learning in traditional classrooms, right, where students are maybe... they're spending a lot of time listening to lectures. They might be doing worksheets to engage with the material, and then they're taking tests and quizzes. I think it's really hard to create meaningful, inclusive opportunities because students with maybe more significant disabilities or, you know, really all learners, I think they need to engage with each other a little bit more, and there needs to be a little bit more of a reason to do that. And that's one of the things that I think PBL does a good job of creating. Once students are working together in teams, there's all these reasons to talk to each other. Mm. So students have to practice communication. They have to practice collaboration. They have to practice conflict resolution, right? They have to practice all these skills that maybe aren't part of the standards. Some have become part of the standards, right? But are really meaningful skills. And they don't feel contrived when they're working on them because they are working towards a common goal and they have a shared ownership in each other's success, which is a really nice way to build in like natural peer supports. And mm-hmm. It also breaks down a lot of barriers in terms of building relationships. So when students have to work together, you know, we say one thing at our school to all our students: you're going to work with every single student in your class. And by class, I mean the 11th grade, right? By the time you mm-hmm. leave and probably more than once. And so you're going to get to know them in ways you would never have gotten to know them if you were just hanging out over here, but with your friends at lunch and sitting next to them in class, but not talking to them. And it really helps to normalize the idea that students all have different strengths and they bring different things to the table. Mm-hmm. So it breaks down a lot of barriers, I think, just around what students think they know about each other and what they think they know about themselves and what they have to gain by learning from each other and working together.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, I think it really adds that, you know, that authenticity that you mentioned earlier, talked about like an authentic audience. And I know a lot of times I'm a history teacher, and I know a lot of times with history work, we'll try to give kids an authentic audience by saying, imagine you're writing a letter to the editor in 1875. And that's not really authentic for the kids. So I'm just so impressed by the way that you do PBL with your students, that it is truly an authentic experience for them, and they're collaborating authentically. And of course, that's going to be a better experience for them.
So how can you get general education teachers to build stronger partnerships with special ed teachers as they seek to build more inclusive classrooms?
I love this question. You know, the first thing this made me think of was my first year of teaching, when I was teaching a special day class. I had one teacher in the school approach me and say, hey, you know, my name's Kathy Gallo. I teach fourth grade, and I would really like your students to be included in my class. And that was such a powerful moment for me. I think I texted all of my special ed teacher friends, bragging about it. And again, I remember it to this day, because especially in schools that are not already set up to have students fully included or partially included in general education classes, it is really daunting as a special educator to kind of think about and figure out, how am I going to make opportunities for my students and approach all of these general ed teachers? And sometimes you build relationships with them in other ways and try to kind of ask for favors. And it just feels really, it feels hard sometimes. And it's part of what I think a lot of special education teachers, they care enough about it to do it and do it well. But I think for general education teachers who are interested in including students with disabilities in their classrooms, and that's not already happening, I think one of the most powerful things you can do is take the initiative to show genuine interest in wanting students at your grade level or who should be in your class to be in your class, and ask why they aren't there and how can we get them there. And that is going to build such a bridge to start such a beautiful relationship, I think, with the special education teacher, but also create opportunities for students beyond just that year and that class and that teacher. Because sometimes the barrier is staffing, right? Sometimes the special education teacher is going to say, I don't have somebody to go support them in your class at that time. Mm-hmm. And so maybe you need to problem solve how they're going to get support, or how you could group their support with somebody else. But really all of those problem solving discussions and collaborative discussions, they need to be rooted in a shared interest in making that work. And I think that's one powerful thing that general education teachers can do. And then I would just say one of the things I do is just try to set up regular times to meet with or check in with general ed teachers, before projects start, during projects, on a weekly basis, whatever really works for you and whatever works for both people or the team, to kind of make sure you're always checking in about, is this working, what's working and what's not working, and what is needed? And then how do we share that responsibility a little bit, right? Mm-hmm. So that it doesn't feel like it's all on one person to make it work. I think general ed teachers are often, when they're timid about general inclusion, one of the things I notice after talking to them is they're worried it's going to be all on them to make it work, right? Mm-hmm. They're not used to getting support with modifying curriculum or figuring out how to get another person to support students in the room. Mm-hmm. And same with special education teachers, right? I think that I have students sometimes in 15 different classes at once, and I can't modify all the curriculum every day for all of those classes, right? So I think just being willing to kind of develop a relationship around what is going to work best for students and how can we together support them, that conversation can really lead to some beautiful collaborative relationships.
Education should be about helping learners find their place in the world. The best way to do this is to engage our learners in activities that allow them to share their strengths and abilities in ways that impact others. Learning should never be contained. It should be applied and reinvested into building a better world.
For more information about Kristen, visit beyondthecurriculumpodcast.com and check out the show notes.
In the next episode of Beyond the Curriculum, we will hear from Dr. Jan Wilson, a Wellspring Associate Professor of Gender Studies and History at the University of Tulsa, whose TED Talk on inclusion challenges viewers to consider how narrow our scope of inclusion is and how we might be able to broaden it.
Jan will share her experience with UDL and the impact it makes on all learners.
If you enjoy this program, be sure to hit the subscribe button as you will want to catch each and every episode.
And remember to leave a rating and review. We appreciate your support, and it helps others find the show.
Beyond the Curriculum is part of the Teachers Going Gradeless Network. Please consider partnering with us through the TG2 Patreon page. Your donation will help offset the cost of producing this podcast and bring more meaningful opportunities that take learners
beyond the curriculum.